clones. Cops are stepping up enforcement on motorists who are not wearing their seatbelts. If you've thought to yourself, I'm not going very far, or I'm in a rush, or seatbelts are just too uncomfortable, then know this. You're putting yourself at the risk of injury or death. Men make up the majority of those who are killed in a car crash. That's a fact. We have to do better, guys. Set an example for your family. Always, always buckle up. Lead from the front. You know the saying. Now make it a household rule to live by. Click it or ticket. When you're not wearing your seatbelt, you're risking serious injury or death. It's a fact. Cops are writing tickets, so don't take the risk. Don't play the odds. Again, let me say it so it sticks. Click it or ticket.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Starting with the NBA. Hey, listen, one thing you want to do, forget the stat line, forget the score, forget the numbers. Game three of the Western Conference Finals can be summed up to me in just two words. Steph back. Steph back. Steph Curry. Had not been Steph Curry for the first two games of that series. Now, the question is why? Was it injury? Was it something else? Was it something the Rockets were doing to him? Whatever it was, the Warriors said it was only a matter of time. And that time was the third quarter last night. Golden State led by 11 at halftime. Then Curry and KD combined for 10 quick points. Golden State up by 21. It looked like it was over, except it wasn't. Houston climbs back in. They cut it to 13, and then it happened. Steph went off. He put James Harden in a blunder, and he hit him with this.
Curry, his choice of screens, uses Klay Thompson, gets Harden guarding him. Harden trying to reach it. Curry step back, quick release. Man's three game. Ball, Curry!
We haven't seen that all series. That move.
Uh-oh! Warriors radio. Then he dropped a shimmy. Then he blew right past Trevor Ariza and hit a floater, and he capped it off by yelling, quote, "This is my bleeping house."
Here comes Curry, met by Ariza. Ball was knocked away. Oh, he wants this shot right here. Oh, he makes a move.
Man's game.
Right here, shake and bake, all the way to the hole, one hand, and let people know this is our building.
Uh-oh. Thanks to TNT for that. You know Steph's feeling it. When he can get off a man's game before he finishes. When he gets off that man's game before he launches a three ball. You know he's feeling it. That was an amazing moment, by the way. After 3 days of being asked about his injury, about his defense, about his poise and composure, he gave the entire world the answer. Warriors fans went ballistic. But so did Steph's mom. But for a totally different reason. He told ESPN, quote, "She already sent me two home videos, showing me the clip and playing it back. She was telling me how I need to wash my mouth out, saying to wash it out with soap. It's a message I've heard before." He went on, quote, "She's right. I got to do better. I can't talk like that," end quote. Well, got to do better. I guess that's pretty much the only thing that he can prove upon in that third quarter, because everything else he did was straight fire. And when Steph was not going off, KD was. KD was continuing to go off. Nick Young was on the bench, miming phone calls for help. That was a Steph Curry game, a Golden State Warrior game, and a Houston Rocket nightmare. You see, if I'm Houston, I'm not sure what's more worrisome. Steph going off, KD continuing to go off, or the fact that Golden State absolutely locked Houston down defensively. That's maybe the biggest problem of all. Well, that and the fact that everyone is now asking, are the Rockets going to go right back into the tank? Again? Is James Harden going to no-show when it matters most? Again? Will Harden, Chris Paul, and Mike D'Antoni get wrapped for disappearing on the big stage? Again? I mean, it's not just that Golden State dropped a buck 26 on you. It's that you finished with 85. It's not just that Steph Curry set that building on fire. It's that Draymond Green was putting out every fire on defense. And it's not just that Golden State's offense was doing anything it wanted. It's that their defense was focused and locked in. And their defensive leader summed up their attitude.
At the end of the day, it's one win. It doesn't matter if you win by 40 or if you win by one. But to respond that way, you know, it means a lot. You know, it's kind of what we've grown to expect. You know, when we get beat up pretty good. We kind of had that appropriate fears we always speak of, and we play a little better. So that was important tonight. I think we felt a little threatened, and we came out and showed that. Now it's important going into game four that we approach with that same mentality. It's not the mentality that we're up 2-1. We got to go in almost feeling like we're down 2-1. We're able to get one in Houston. So now, the way to protect that is come out game four, guns blazing, trying to take care of business.
He's right about that. Their mentality was much different. Their approach was much different. They came at it much differently from the very jump. But far be it for me to disagree with Draymond Green, but I will disagree with one thing. There is a difference between losing by one and losing by 41, especially when it's happened to the Rockets before, especially when it's happened to James Harden before, especially when there's been questions about Chris Paul on the big stage. It's all coming back now in a bad way. Yeah, Golden State felt a little threatened. They responded in game three. That's the switch being flipped. They committed only one foul on James Harden when he was driving. You see, that's what makes Golden State so scary. They can win without their two-time MVP playing his best. They can win without their perennial all-star Klay Thompson playing his best. And the Rockets still can't do a damn thing about Kevin Durant, who pretty much does whatever he wants, whenever he wants, against them. You see, the Warriors have a margin for error unlike anybody else. Houston, though, doesn't. Not against Golden State. For Houston to win, they need James Harden to be at his best. They need Chris Paul to be at his best, and neither were. Nowhere near it. And even if they do get what they need from Harden and Paul, and they didn't. But even if they do, they also need some combination of Eric Gordon and Trevor Ariza and PJ Tucker and Clint Capella to be at their best. And then maybe then they can beat Golden State. I'm not saying that the series is over. I am saying Houston, after their most humiliating postseason beatdown ever, is now in a must-win situation in Game 4. And they've got to win in a building where Golden State has not lost in the playoffs since 2016. I'm also saying that Golden State has lost only 4 playoff games since Kevin Durant arrived. 4 playoff games in the last 2 years. And now Houston needs them to lose 3 in a week. Good luck with that. In other words, the series is pretty much over. Step back. Series over. Sean Livingston is my guest. Sean, good morning. It's so good to have you back. Sean, how are you?
Thanks for having me on, Jim. I'm good. Good after a win last night.
Boy, I'll tell you, Sean, what a win that was, too. Great, great game. In fact, before we talk about the game, can you tell me, Sean, what was the mood like among the team after that Game 2 loss and in preparation for Game 3?
Uncomfortable. Anytime, right? You don't like to lose the game, and I think we're kind of always at our best when we're uncomfortable. We have that appropriate fear. When you win a game, you go on a streak in the playoffs. You just kind of let your guard down, right? It's kind of human nature. It's human nature to let your guard down, and I think after a loss, we kind of reset. We hit the reset button and say, we go back and look at the film and say, where can we get better? And I think we just had to play harder and have pay more attention to the game plan.
Sean Livingston, my guest. I thought you guys came in with a different mentality, a different approach, and you went right at him. Sean, in terms of Steph Curry, in the media, there were all these questions about Steph, whether or not he was healthy, whether or not Houston was doing something to him. Was there any worry or any concern in your mind, or did you know it was just a matter of time before Steph got his and turned back into Steph?
Absolutely. It's just a matter of time. It's all about your mindset, Jim, really. In professional sports, it's 90% mental, right? The game is, of course, you have to be healthy, and Steph is healthy. And at the end of the day, if he doesn't hit shots, it's, oh, Steph's not healthy. But if he's hitting shots, it's, oh, he's healthy again, right? I mean, that's just, how we think. But at the end of the day, it's really just about his mental, and Steph is great. He's always pushing forward. It's always next play mentality. He could be 0 for 10, 0 for 15, and still have the confidence to shoot like he's, shot 100%, right? And so it was just about, seeing a heavy break and really just, shooting the ball and seeing the ball go in the hole for him. And that happened last night. And, the rest is history. You saw how he kind of, started dancing again and getting back to being himself.
Sean Livingston joining us. Sean, as I mentioned off the top, you had an absolutely filthy move on James Harden in the fourth quarter where you rocked him, you went behind the back, and then you blew right by him for an easy dunk. Can you take us through the play? What did you see, and then how did it feel when you pulled that off?
Well, it was, firstly, it was one play, but it was just you know, me just being aggressive. I mean, I was probably happier just with the fact that I was aggressive last night. You know, getting 9 shots up, right? Hunting shots out there, and just trying to be a threat, you know, so the defense has to be honest. And the main thing is, you know, it was just coming down and I saw the lane kind of open up, you know, Steph and Draymond were in the backcourt. Their guys, you know, they weren't in the front court. So, it was just kind of coming downhill in a one-on-one play. And I just, you know, anytime I'm aggressive like that, you know, I like my chances regardless, make or miss.
Monday's episode is brought to you by Fan Exchange. If you're looking to get to the yard this week for a baseball game, make sure you check out Fan Exchange before you buy. Fan Exchange. Are you thinking about buying tickets to your favorite sports, concert, or theater event? If so, you want to bust on over to FanExchange.com for a safe, easy, and reliable experience. Tickets purchased on FanExchange are always guaranteed, no getting to the gate and worrying about getting in. Whether it's March Madness, MLB Opening Day, WrestleMania, Coachella, or a Broadway musical, FanExchange gets you closer to the action. Find the very best seats at the very best prices at FanExchange.com. Use the promo code ROME. That's promo code ROME and get 50% off the service fees on your next purchase. Fan Exchange. We have tickets. Fan Exchange. Promo code ROME. Sean Livingston, my guest. You know, Sean, when you talk about your aggression, from the outside, it seems like it's been a really challenging season in terms of injuries to guys and the general wear and tear of three straight finals runs and another deep run this postseason. But at the same time, Sean, it seems like you personally have been able to find another gear in the postseason. Is it just a matter of pacing through the regular season, or when the playoffs come around, does that adrenaline just kick in?
It really is. It really is, Jim. And I mean, you know, I don't like to, you know, I don't want to say like, you know, the regular season doesn't matter. You know, I don't play hard, right? But at the same time, you know, we understand what we're playing for, and just, you know, with my role on this team, a guy like Andre David, right? I mean, we played multiple seasons in this league, you know, and we understand our roles, right? Why they have us here, our importance, our value. And it's around this time of year, right, where our value is multiplied. And so I think, you know, the main, you know, I think the main idea, the main target is just to really be ready, to keep yourself in good shape in the season, you know, make sure you're getting your rhythm, your reps. But health is of the utmost importance. And this is the time of year where, you know, we train ourselves to be ready and in tip-top shape so we can, you know, play as hard as we absolutely can.
Golden State Warrior Sean Livingston joining us right after a big game. You know, Sean, I want to go back to your roles and how different it is for this team and what the culture is like, but I want to ask you about that barn, that arena you play in. I mean, you've played in a lot of different arenas. How would you describe it when Oracle gets rocking the way it was last night? What's that noise like, and then how tough is that on the opposition?
It's just when we go on those runs, I mean, just the last 4 years I've been here, you know, every year, it's like we go on a run, and it's like it feels like the building is shaking, right? I mean, it's like, again, the floodgates open up, and it's just pouring down, right? You got shots coming from all over. You got dunks. I mean, we're getting out in transition. And, I mean, the number one factor in that is defense, Jim. It's like, you know, we lock in. Everybody's on a string. We're all connected. We're all trusting each other. And, you know, once we start those runs, obviously, you know, Steph is in there. You know, Steph and Clay are hitting threes from everywhere. You know, Andre, Draymond, they're getting dunks. And it's, you know, it's just rocking, man. And as an opponent, right, I mean, you have to really have some veteran guys to kind of settle in and you know, really try to take the air back out of the building because, you know, it's like you can't breathe in there. Everybody's yelling, screaming. I mean, it's like suffocating.
Sean Livingston joins us. Sean, you've been writing a playoff diary, the S. Dot Lounge for the Athletic. I think it's great. How are you enjoying that experience? What's that like?
Oh, it's awesome. Actually, I was supposed to write a third one. I didn't get a chance to do it, but you know, that's coming soon. But it's just really just trying to be honest, right? Trying to be honest and open as much as possible. You know, with what's going on inside the locker room. You know, what I'm feeling as a player. You know, off the court, you know, as a family man, as a father, husband, you know, putting all those roles into one diary and just being honest and, you know, giving the fans some insight just to see what it's like under a playoff type atmosphere.
I mean, it's so important, Sean, because the fans, one, they want to know, and two, they really don't know. They have no idea that right. in a lot of way you guys are like the rest of us with similar right. kinds of things going on. It's great that you let them in like that. Sean, listen, I know you never want to make it about you, but I want to make it about you for a moment. For those who do not know, Zion Spencer is a high school basketball player in Chicago. He rolled his ankle, and then when they were evaluating the ankle, they discovered that he had bone cancer in September, and he had his right leg amputated below the knee. You heard about that story, and you hosted a game for him. What was your reaction when you heard that story, and then what was it like to spend time with him?
Oh, man, it was amazing. I mean, those are the type of stories that give you life. You know, just getting a chance to spend some time with him. I'm not sure. I think that was his first NBA game, but just seeing the look on his face, right, when KD comes up, Steph comes up, spend some time with him. You know, you come up and you talk to him, you get a chance to know his family. It's a heartbreaking situation, right? Because that could be any of us. That could happen to anybody. And, you know, sometimes, you know, we're not always in control of the cards we play. And, you know, for his situation to go through that as a young kid, right? I mean, you know, we miss a shot. We think it's the end of the world as a player, right? You lose a game, it's the end of the world. But, you know, imagine going through something like that. So it just it humanizes things and really puts things into perspective for myself, for my family, my outlook. So, you know, it was amazing time just to spend with him. You know, we got to spend a day together, and I still keep in touch with him. You know, recently found out he got accepted into Morehouse College. So, he's looking for scholarship funding right now. And, you know, just proud of him and try to keep those relationships and build, because those are the things that last, you know.
Sean Livingston, my guest. If you're watching on CBS Sports Network and you saw that just awesome video, that's courtesy of the Players Tribune. I want to thank them for that. You know, Sean, that said, he is a LeBron fan. And when you were hosting him, he asked you if you faced the Cavs, or you asked him if you faced the Cavs in the finals, who are you going to root for? What was his response? And then what did you make of that response?
Right. I think we had a kind of a, you know, I don't want to say a bet, but, you know, kind of a, kind of a wager, you know, if LeBron had gotten to the finals, which, you know, I didn't think was going to happen after that first series, that, you know, definitely, and we were able to get there, then, you know, I would invite him back to the game because I know that's his favorite player. So I had to, you know, I kind of had to bust his balls a little bit, man, and, you know, and you know, talk a little trash. When Steph came over, you know, telling him about how this was the LeBron fan and, you know, everything else. And he was a stand-up guy. He was a stand-up guy. So, you know, shout out to Zion for that. You know, he's definitely a LeBron fan, and he will let you know. And he let the whole team know in Oracle Arena, you know, which is not a popular vote.
I love it, and I know you respect that, Sean. Listen, before you go, one more thing about The Athletic. Your teammate David West did an interview with Marcus Thompson, and one of the things that he talked about was the fact that your locker room is an egoless group. He said, quote, "I've had to tell the young guys, y'all need to talk to some other people. Ask guys what it's like in other environments because this is not normal," end quote. I mean, how do you explain that vibe, Sean, that you have in that room, and then how unusual is it to have a vibe and a culture like that?
Man, that's a great question, because we were just talking about that. Myself, Andre, David, who else? JaVale McGee. I mean, you know, Nick Young, guys that have been around multiple teams, and you get a chance to see, right? I mean, it's like a swinging door. You know, if you're on a team for a while, you see guys, you know, come and go. And then, if, you know, a guy like myself, been on, you know, a lot of teams, almost every team in the NBA, you see what locker rooms are like. You see what, you know, coaching, how coaching changes affect organizations and, you know, ownership all the way down to the players, you know. And it's like, you know, what we have here is special, obviously, going, you know, three straight trips to the finals. You know, a coach like Steve Kerr, GM like Bob Myers, those guys that, you know, care about people. Right. I mean, that's the number one thing I would say. I mean, it's hard in a professional sports, you know, to actually care about the players, to care about the people that you're around, because everybody is jockeying for position. Everybody's working, trying to work their way up the ladder. Right. And so it's unheard of. And so we talked to the rookies like, listen, you know, like, it's not going to be like this everywhere you go. You know, make sure that, you know, you're soaking up knowledge from, you know, the vets. Make sure you guys are working hard and doing everything that you're supposed to be doing, because, you know, again, one trade, one injury, things happen, you get shuffled and moved around. I mean, there's different environments out there, right? So we try to just kind of give them that knowledge and drop gems on them.
It's honestly the best description of the Warriors culture that I've ever heard. Sean Livingston's a two-time NBA champion. He was the fourth pick overall in the draft back in 2004. Houston's at Golden State tomorrow. Sean, I can't say how much I appreciate you or this relationship. All the years you've come on this program to come on the night after a win like that is just awesome. Sean, I really appreciate you, man. Thank you so much.
Yes, sir. Thanks for having me, Jim.
You're the best, Sean. Sean Livingston, my guest. God, he's been coming on the show so long. Love talking to Sean Livingston. What a class act. And, of course, my thanks to Sean and the guys who made that happen. Ray Ritter et al., the legend. Experience Control GX from Just for Men. The first shampoo with a brain. So what makes it so smart? It reduces gray the same way it grows in gradually. The more you shampoo with Control GX, the less gray you have. Simply use it until, just use it until you like what you see. Now, how smart is that? Smart enough to be voted Men's Hair Care Product of the Year. Gradually reduce gray with the first shampoo with a brain. Find Control GX in the shave aisle. That's Control GX. First of all, Vegas, I got to ask once again. How you living? What's going on? How you feeling this morning? How was your weekend? And are you ready for this? Because I'm about to say the words that you have waited so long to hear. That long wait. It's over. Yes, I said it. The long wait is finally over. The Vegas Golden Knights are headed to the NHL Stanley Cup Finals. You waited. How long have you waited? Let me check this out. Let me check my notes. You've waited 8 long months to get your shot at a cup, and now it's finally here. There are 9-month-olds in Henderson, Nevada, who have lived their entire lives without seeing the Vegas Golden Knights in the Stanley Cup Final. And now here they are. Think about that for a minute. A child born last November had never seen the Golden Knights playing for the Stanley Cup. And now the wait is finally over. The dream is alive. Vegas did Winnipeg in Winnipeg 2-1 to cap off a 5-game series. So to recap, in their first season, they won their division. They swept the Kings in the first round. They smashed the Sharks in 6. They dropped the first game in Winnipeg, and then they ran off 4 straight, including the closeout game in maybe the loudest barn in the NHL. And now they're skating around with the Colin S. Campbell Bowl. So much for that superstition that it's bad luck to touch the conference championship trophy. So much for that idea that it would take the Golden Knights years to be competitive. Hell yes, they should skate around with the conference championship trophy. Hell, why stop there? They ought to drink out of it. They should wear it as a hat because, as Ryan Reeves said, quote, "We call ourselves the Golden Misfits for a reason. We've proven everyone else wrong all season." End of quote. This guy's a stud. What a beast. How about that tip in to win it? And no, I'm not going to come in here and say, "Hey, Canada. Yo, Canada, how's your morning? How's your weekend? How's that taste, Canada?" I'm not going to say that. Nor am I going to say that you have not won a cup in a quarter century. Nor that was your last hope this year. And that you lost to a team that didn't even exist last year. I'm not going to do that, Canada. It's too Bush League, and I've got class. But it is absolutely amazing. There has never been a hockey story like this one. Hell, I'm not sure there's ever been a sports story quite like this one. Again, not only an expansion team, but an expansion team in Las Vegas. And not only an expansion team in Las Vegas, but an expansion team in Las Vegas going to the Stanley Cup Final in its first year. Man, that was amazing. Almost as amazing as seeing Wayne Newton firing up the crowd Friday night. I mean, I got to say, seeing that, I don't remember the last time I was as fired up as I was.
What better way to get us going than Mr. Las Vegas, Wayne Newton? Get up on your feet, Vegas. Here we go. Let's do it, baby. Crank it up. Here we go. Oh,
get it, Wayne. Oh, man, I'm hoping you're watching the simulcast. I'm hoping you're watching that and not just listening to it, but watching it on CBS Sports Network. Oh, hell yes. Wayne Newton in the house. Mr. Las Vegas, if you need him. And I hope you saw that. And if you did see that, if you didn't get goosebumps watching him crank that siren and the crowd going completely insane, man, you aren't alive. You don't have a heartbeat. And do not come in here because I know it's happening. I know it's coming. Do not come in here nor at me and tell me that the different expansion rules made it too easy. It's garbage.
Garbage.
Complete and utter garbage. Yes, the rules were different this time, but these guys were not supposed to be competitive for a few years. Just like I'm not interested in hearing, of course they're winning, Rome. They got Marc-Andre Fleury in between the pipes. Yeah, they've got Flower. Yes, they do, but why do they have him? Because Pittsburgh didn't want him anymore. Pittsburgh gave up on this guy. It's not like they stole him. Back in August, team owner Bill Foley was telling everybody that the team would be, quote, pretty good in 3 years and will make a run in 5 or 6, end quote. Turns out they were pretty good in 3 games, and they made a run in 5 or 6 months. This wasn't the plan. The plan was that they could draft this team, be a seller at the deadline, and then build for the future. Be honest. How many teams in that league would have traded their roster for Vegas' roster at the start of the season? I'm going to say not many at all, if any at all. And if it were a movie, it'd be just too cheesy, too over the top to believe. A group of cast-offs, rejects, misfits, who come together and play for the Stanley Cup? Way too cheesy, way too over the top, even for Hollywood. Except it's not Hollywood, it's real. And now they're 4 wins away from a parade down the strip. Let me repeat that for the people in the back. 4 freaking wins away from a Stanley Cup parade right down the Las Vegas Strip. Well, one sidebar note on Wayne Newton. Has Wayne had any work done? Has Wayne had some work done? I don't know. It's not where I live. Well, it is actually where I live. I live in Southern California where people do that all the time. People wake up in the morning like, hey, what should I get done today? Listen, I don't know enough to know myself. I don't know if the guy did. I really don't. I don't know why his face doesn't move more than it does. I don't know anything about that. I can't say for certain. But if you ghouls are wanting to talk about Mr. Las Vegas instead of the Golden Knights, then you're barking up the wrong tree. Mr. Entertainment was in that joint on Friday to fire up that crowd and get a win. And he did both. Scoreboard. Look up at it. Stop looking at him. Look at the scoreboard instead. Hell yes. Wayne Newton was in the house. And you wish you could claim him as your own. Did you see the way that guy went to work on that crank? Why are you ringing the bell on me, Avi?
I love when you talk hockey.
That's what that is. It's a crank. What else would you call that? Can't get enough. These guys are amazing. And so is Mr. Entertainment. Respect the crank. Look at that thing. It's so awesome. Now, my man is on fire. 1-800-636-8686. I'm going to leave it at that.
Oh, yeah!
Oh, yeah! Wayne Newton. I want to see that guy's show. I have never seen a Wayne Newton show. If it's anything like that show he put on Friday night, I'd be there front and center. And as you might imagine, Canada, you're getting a lot of reaction. So get ready to call us fat. Dear Canada, we'll keep the Stanley Cup. You can have Johnny Football. Signed, America. Unwar Canadians calling themselves lean. They're just skinny weaklings who dream of being one of Bieber's backup dancers. That one is unsigned. This guy's take is you're not lean. You're not fit. You're a skinny weakling. I'm going to do my best to keep this responsible. Hey, Canada. This is an email. This is not me. Hey, Canada. I'd rather be fat than not be able to win a Stanley Cup in a game that you invented. Signed, Fat Americans. Matt in Tucson. Tyler, are you listening? Matt in Van, are you listening? Ed Hedstrom Bacon is in. He tweets, someone should notify Raiders fan that it's highly unlikely that the team will be in the 2020 Super Bowl. I can guarantee they won't. Liz is back at Liz in Fall City. She tweets, was that Wayne Newton or Wax Newton? Liz? Come on, Liz. Do better, Elizabeth. Don't get dragged down, Liz.
Oh, yeah!
Another email. Wayne Newton introduced the game the other night. Let me know if the Lightning or Capitals need my services. Signed, Burt Bacharach. Stephen PHX. Damn, Steve, you butchered that guy's name. You did a real number on that cat's name. Wayne Newton. He's identified with Vegas. Vegas. Wayne. I mean, if I were to say to you, let's play a little word association. If I say Vegas, what do you think? How many of you would have said Wayne Newton? All of you? Ready? Vegas, Wayne Newton. Game 4 of the Eastern Conference Finals is on tonight, so there is no way I am leaving the tube for a run to the store. Get groceries right from your couch tonight. You can bypass those overpriced local markets and shop at Thrive Market. It's a revolutionary online marketplace on a mission to make healthy living easy and affordable for everybody. I love Thrive Market. It's stocked with thousands of the best-selling non-GMO foods and natural products, and they're always at 25 to 50% below traditional retail prices. They have everything you need. Best of all, Thrive Market's prices are already up to 50% off, and now they're giving you an extra $60 in free groceries plus free shipping. Get $60 of free organic groceries plus free shipping and a 30-day trial. You got to move on this right now. Go to thrivemarket.com/Rome. That's thrivemarket.com/Rome. Eddie Olchek. Edzo, good morning. How are you, Eddie?
Hey, what's up, Jim? How you doing, pal?
Good, good. Eddie, how about you? How are things?
Doing great. Best time of year, man.
Best time of year. All right, so you've been around the game your entire life, Eddie, a very long time. Have you ever seen anything like the Vegas Golden Knights winning the Western Conference and advancing to the Stanley Cup Final?
Nothing like it, Jim. I mean, it is an incredible story to think about. This team wasn't even in the National Hockey League a year ago at this time. And to see them get the franchise, see the support in Vegas, see the players that were, you know, drafted, see the players that were brought in. George McPhee, the general manager, and his staff did an incredible job. The resources with the owner, Bill Foley. Beautiful rink there, T-Mobile. I mean, it's just been absolutely incredible. Look, if they're not the sports team of the year, let alone the sports team of the decade, and no disrespect to the Loyola Ramblers men's basketball team and Sister Jean, but I think the Vegas Golden Knights are the story of the century. There is no question the last 10 years. I mean, to think about where they've come from, an expansion team in the finals of their particular sport, and to see them only 4 wins away from winning the Stanley Cup, it really is incredible.
I think you're right, Eddie. And if they do finish this thing, I think they're a team for the ages. Now go back to George McPhee for a minute, if you don't mind. The GM was quick to make it about the players, but how much credit does he deserve for not just bringing in players who fit together, Eddie, but players who have the similar attitude and mentality?
Yeah, a boatload. He deserves a lot of credit. I mean, George is that type of guy. He is a man's man. Like, he gets it, and he... Him and his staff identified a lot of players. First off, they identified how they wanted to play. They were going to have Gerard Gallant as their coach. He will be coach of the year without question. Doesn't matter what happens in the postseason. It's all about the regular season as far as the coach of the year award. So he will win that. So what type of players do we get for Gerard Gallant? And then you have to find those type of players. And what they did is they identified guys that had some experience, like Marc-Andre Fleury, James Neal, David Perron, a guy like Nate Schmidt, who was kind of just on the verge of coming into the National Hockey League, is one of the, you know, fifth or sixth defensemen in Washington. George McPhee knew him from his days there. And they took a shot on some guys that underachieved the first couple of years in their career. And you bring them all together, and look, all these guys had chips on their shoulders. There's no doubt about it. But the opportunity to go to Vegas, to play for an expansion team, and us against them, you know, us against the world mentality, and it's just been, I mean, it's hard to put into words. I mean, it just is an incredible story to really think about a team that wasn't even in existence last year during the Stanley Cup final, comes together in a course of 8 or 9 months, and here they are 4 wins away from winning the Stanley Cup.
Eddie Olczyk, my guest, still, Ed, there's some that's not good enough for. Let's address something. It's been something of a backlash from some hockey fans saying that the expansion rules were changed. They made it too easy for the Golden Knights this year. I mean, there's no doubt that the rules are different, but you've won a Stanley Cup, Eddie, so you know how hard this is. What's your reaction when you hear the suggestion that it was easy for a team that did not exist a year ago to reach the Stanley Cup final?
There is nothing easy about winning a Stanley Cup. There is absolutely nothing. And sure, they played by the rules. The rules were is that teams had to follow a formula, and they had to protect a certain amount of players. They had to expose a certain amount of players. And what ended up happening? Teams started making side deals with Vegas not to take certain guys, and we'll give you a draft pick for this player if you take this player. And look, there was all kinds of wheeling and dealing. And look, I think what you got to look at, it's a combination. Yeah, Vegas made some incredible moves, but then you look at maybe some of the moves made by other teams, the decisions that they made, Jim, helped feed this incredible wave in Vegas and to see them in the Stanley Cup final. So I just don't think it's not only about the rules and you know the players that were available, but also the maneuvering and the managing by George McPhee, working on other general managers and taking advantage in certain situations. And look, sometimes you play the game. It's, you know, I mean, it's business. And sometimes you sit there and you play a bluff type of game and go, well, geez, I know you guys really like that player, but I'm not going to say that. So you know what? We're going to go after that player, and we really don't like that player, but we're going to maybe be able to get an extra draft pick, or maybe we can get an extra player out of that team somewhere down the line. So I think you look at it from both sides, and there are some managers there, I'm sure, when they look back and you see some of the players that are not on their rosters and now on Vegas' roster, you sit there and go, and the fan base probably goes, Jim, and says, well, geez, if those guys were on our team, you know, maybe we'd be making a run, or maybe we would still be involved in the playoffs. So I think it's a combination, but Vegas did what they were supposed to do. They paid the $600-plus million. The rules were there, the draft was there, and here they are in a Stanley Cup final.
Eddie Olczyk, my guest. Sometimes you play some poker, and nobody's playing it better than McPhee right now. Eddie, let's jump down to some horse racing before I let you go. You predicted the trifecta at the Kentucky Derby. You picked Justify to win the Preakness as well. Before I ask you about the race, let's talk about the vibe. What was it like at Pimlico under those conditions on Saturday?
Jim, you've been to the track as much as I have, and you don't. There are very, very few days, if any, you go to the racetrack and there's that eerie feeling at the racetrack. And when you couldn't see the horses break out of the gate, you could just hear the thundering hooves coming down the clubhouse stretch for the first time. You couldn't hear them. You could only hear them, but you couldn't see them. And the next thing you know, here they are right on top of you, and then they would disappear because I was standing at the finish line waiting for a possible interview if Justify did not win the race. So, you know, you're sitting there watching on the monitors. I thought our NBC crew did an incredible job of showing those pictures in really adverse conditions. I mean, at track level, Jim, you couldn't see maybe 75 yards in front of you. You couldn't see it. But I thought our crew, Rob Hyland, our producer, and Pierre Moussa, our director, did an incredible job of bringing it on TV, and I was able to watch it after. But it was pretty surreal to see that. And then when they were turning for home, and how about Larry Colmus, our race caller? You know, he's got he watched it off the monitor for like 80% of the race. Like, so what you were watching and I watched after the race, he was calling the race off the monitor because, you know, he's up on top of Pimlico and you can't see through the fog up there. It was way worse. So it was just absolutely incredible. And to see Justify hold off Good Magic, that's for another day. I'm not sure of the ride that Good Magic got from Jose Ortiz of being that aggressive and then getting to the rail, which is the worst part of the track down the stretch. But Justify seems like he's the real deal, and you can throw 100 horses at him he just walks around there and runs around there like he's the best and he's going to show everybody.
Eddie Olczyk, my guest. God, Eddie, it was so eerie. It was really very, very eerie even to watch it on TV. And I thought that NBC did a great job with that. Larry Colmus is the best at what he does. So before you go, Eddie, what do you make about that? I mean, to me, justified. We knew he was a spectacular athlete, very, very freaky athletic specimen, but he showed a lot of heart and a lot of grit and he dug deep and he held on. How do you think he comes back from a race like that? Do you think he can handle a mile and a half? And how do you think he does at Big Sandy?
No, I believe that he can. I think he could run probably 2 miles, Jim. I really do. I just think that this horse has the goods, has the ability to be able to dictate the terms and say, you know, this is my race. And, you know, he was very close to the lead in the Preakness. He was just off the pace to start the Kentucky Derby. So he's very tactical. As you know, it's a much different race for these horses and these jockeys when you run a mile and 3/16 or a mile and a quarter like you do with the Preakness and Derby, respectively. It's a mile and a half. I mean, it is a long way to the finish line, and it does become a jockey race. And I just look like, you know, his stride seems to be 2 for everybody's 1. And when you're that close to the pace and you're on the lead, you know, you dictate the terms and say, okay, you know, you guys got to come and try to mow me down. So I don't see the distance being an issue. The only question that I would have would be all these races in a short period of time. But in my opinion, you got the best trainer in the world in Bob Baffert. Baffert, you know, thinks the world of this horse. And I think if he gets off the plane and gets to Belmont, he's going to have a huge shot at a Triple Crown.
Eddie, quick follow. If it's a jockey race and Belmont is, what do you think about the job Mike Smith has done in handling that horse?
Just awesome. Just awesome. I mean, he has, you know, he has the engine under him. There's no doubt about that. But it's, as you know, being in the game, you know, sometimes the pilot can get a little aggressive or have too much patience. And next thing you know, you're wondering why you didn't win a race, but they call him Money Mike for a reason. And I mean, it's just amazing to see what he's been able to do. And look, you know, Mike Smith is very selective on the horses that he rides and the horses that he gets. But when you put that combination of Mike Smith and Bob Baffert together, I think it could, you know, they could win a 10 claimer at Los Al, or they could sit there and win the Triple Crown. And a real special pilot on top of obviously a tremendous horse.
Edzo, Money Mike has made me a lot, and Baffert's cost me a lot. Eddie Olczyk, Mike. Edzo, so good to have you on, man. Love you, appreciate it. Great to have you back.
Love you.
Thank
too,
you,
Jim. Thanks a lot. Say hi to the family. I appreciate it.
You got it. You too, Edzo. Eddie Olczyk. Johnny Football going to be back playing some football, but it's in Canada. So a couple of years after wrecking his rep, his rental properties, any chance he had of getting back in the NFL, the former first rounder is going north of the border to finally begin his comeback season that he's been talking about for so long. And I'll be straight. Unlike Matt in Vancouver, I'm not here to clown this guy. In fact, I think he's doing the right thing. I think it's the right decision. You can only push so much merch and so many sweatshirts for so long. You can only tell people you're all about playing football, but not actually play football for so long. And while you can crush this guy for thinking that an NFL team was actually going to pick up the phone and call because he showed out in the spring league or he showed up at some college pro day in San Diego magically, you really can't take a run at this guy for going north of the border and finally putting a pen to paper and strapping on some pads. At least he's willing to do it. Hell, Tebow, your idol, wouldn't do it. Here are the deets of Manziel's 2-year contract with the Hamilton Tiger Cats per my guy Jason Lockenfora. 2-year commitment without an escape clause for the NFL. $122,000 in base, $10,000 to sign, $18,000 in a housing stipend, and some decent incentives for playing time before he gets a bump in base for year two. I mean, look, the economics of the CFL obviously are not the economics of the NFL, and it's a fraction of what Manziel and his agent want to get that deal done. Hey, don't get me wrong. It's not a bad living if you're a 25-year-old kid, but a rather meager one for a guy only 4 years removed from being a first-round draft pick. And while I know that the U.S. dollar is doing some nice things north of the border these days, that's definitely not enough money to put in his bleeping hands.
How much money in my f***ing hand?
I can't hear you. I'll
call you back.
He'll call you back. He'll call you back. He'll call you back. Listen, He'll call you back. He'll call you back. He can't hear you. He'll call you back. He can't hear you. He's got too much bleeping money in his ear. He'll call you back. Listen, if the ball really is the thing, then that is really the right choice. If it's all about playing football, then it's his only choice. And it's set up pretty well for him. It's not a lock, but it's set up pretty well. He's got the right coach, could be playing in the right system. June Jones can coach quarterbacks up. He's never really had a guy quite like Manziel. And the fact that Johnny actually showed up on time and on the first day of camp, that's another sign that's pointing in the right direction. Because Jeremiah Masoli is not giving up that starting job because John won a Heisman a half a lifetime ago. So, it's time to start drinking from the fire hydrant, John. I mean, yes, football is football, but it is a little different in Canada. The field is longer. There are 12 dudes coming at you instead of 11. Your receivers can get a running start, and you've only got three downs to deal with. And that's not going to be the only thing that's different. The nightlife in Hamilton, although I have not been, I'm going to assume it's a little less lit, than Hollywood. Those one-way tickets to Vegas are probably going to be a little bit tougher to book. But there is a bright side. You can't get kicked out of the Manning Passing Academy in Southwest Ontario. And your boy Drake is only a couple of miles away, if he's not still waiting for Kendrick Perkins in the tunnel. So yes, 2 years sounds like a lifetime. But you just threw 2 years away doing more damage to your livelihood and rep than anything that's going to happen in the next 2 years. And now that your personal life and mental health are better than they've been in years, here's hoping that that comeback season is more than just some slogan on a sweatshirt that you're pimping out. Because I still remember the dude that went out there and lit Nick Saban up a couple of times. I still remember the first freshman to win the Heisman. I remember the show that kid put on every time he touched the turf. I'm not saying that he can turn the clock back. I'm not saying he'll ever be that guy again, but I know that I remember it. And Johnny freaking football is finally back, hopefully to playing some football. And that's a hell of a lot better of an ending than the story could have ever been. You know, when you get right down to it, this really isn't even about football, at least not primarily. This is about this guy getting his life back and doing the right things and making better choices. So I like this choice. I like this decision. That I can say. I've got no idea whether or not this guy's really willing to do the work. I've got no idea if he's there and he's going to stay there. But I like the decision. I can say that much. So, John, go to work. Get your ass to work.
Get your
Put
ass
in the
to
time.
Moss.
Get your ass to work.
Get your ass to Moss.
Howard Beck is my guest. All right, so if you're the Houston Rockets, Howard, and you're watching film of last night's game, what's going through your mind right now?
It's a great question. That they've got to figure out the one thing that no one's been able to figure out for the last, you know, four seasons, basically, which is if Steph Curry's cooking like that, is there an answer? I don't know that there is, especially when you've got to have one eye at all times on Kevin Durant off to the side. I mean, the impossibility of the Warriors really comes down to those two. We talk about their four All-Stars, and there's so many dimensions to this team that those four bring. But when it comes right down to it, what took this team from already great to perhaps unbeatable was that Durant element. And so, you know, look, Curry didn't get on track those first couple of games. You knew, if healthy, this kind of game was coming. What can the Rockets do about that? I mean, you know, that's for Jeff Bizdelic and Mike D'Antoni to figure out. But I don't know that the Warriors are a solvable problem. I've never been convinced that at full health they're a solvable problem.
Yeah, I was just going to say, Howard, I mean, if you're Mike D'Antoni, exactly what do you do? What can they do? If you've got Steph doing what he was doing, if you've got Kevin Durant doing what he has been doing, and Draymond locking it down on defense the way he is, exactly how do you beat Golden State?
It's going to take all of their offensive weapons, and they just don't have as many, right? Like, Chris Paul has not been that impactful on this series so far. James Harden, as great as he is, just hasn't been good enough. And beyond those two, you know, Clint Capella is this really nice piece for them, but, you know, he's not a creator, obviously. He's a guy who's going to feed off of the two-point guards and, you know, score on duck-ins and putbacks, and he's going to affect the game with his shot blocking and his defense, but they just don't have that other dimension. And so trying to keep up with them, if it's a defensive struggle, that's one thing. If it's all about trying to outscore them, I really just don't think they can. They don't have those kinds of players. I think the best they can do is get the Warriors playing a plodding, slow-down game because the Rockets, thrive in those isolation sets. And maybe they can do more to try to get Curry off his game by getting him in early foul trouble and attacking the way they did before. But we saw if they go too far with that strategy, they get stagnant. So, again, I don't know if it's a solvable problem.
Howard Beck, NBA senior writer for Bleacher Report, joining us. I mean, Howard, the Rockets are a really good team. You don't stumble your way into 65 games. You have to be a really good team. But if they lose this series, and especially if they lose it in five games, they're going to take some heat. They're going to take some criticism. In your mind, is it justified? How fair would that be?
It's always fair. It's always fair game, especially when you win 65 games. But that said, I don't think anybody went into this postseason, aside from the Rockets, believing that the Rockets would actually be the better team. Whether you go down in five, six, seven games, if they lose this series, it's still going to go down as a major disappointment because they've got two, future Hall of Famers in the backcourt. They've got a team that was, among the best offensively and defensively this season. Expectations were high, but we are, they are operating in an era where the Warriors are putting a historically great lineup out on the court. I think the bigger concern is this, Jim. Chris Paul, great pickup for them last summer, but he's 33. He just turned 33 a couple weeks ago. I don't know how big their window actually is with this group. Even if they re-sign him, which obviously is kind of assumed this summer, they're going to re-sign him. They'll probably keep Clint Capella, although he's going to get some big offers. But is this group good enough to just run it back with? Can they add? How are they going to add? They've obviously, like most teams, they've got cap problems. And Chris Paul is 33. What's the actual window for contending with him as James Harden's running mate? And if he doesn't have that long of a future or that much left as an elite player, who's replacing him? How do you extend the era with somebody else? So that's going to be the struggle for them. And again, that's assuming they go down in this round.
I think these are great points. Howard Beck is my guest. Howard, help me with this. After the game one win, there started to be all this talk that Golden State is bad for basketball. It seemed to resurface once again last night. If they win this series and they win another championship, you can only imagine how much louder the talk is going to get. So what do you make of that particular argument?
I don't dismiss it, Jim. It's an eye of the beholder thing. On the one hand, the ratings will probably be through the roof again. People love watching the Warriors, whether they're hate watching them or love watching them, whether they just think that they're entertaining, whether they want to see somebody else knock them out. They draw. They are a draw. That level of talent is always going to be attractive to watch. So you can't say it's bad from a ratings perspective in the finals. It's bad from a suspense perspective because we start the season thinking that no one has a shot. Well, we at least had some suspense, Jim. The Warriors didn't finish with the best record in the NBA or in their conference. They did start this series on the road, but promptly stole home court advantage back. And there's at least been some sense that the Rockets could take them down. And look, that's still yet to be determined. It's only a 2-1 series. But if the Warriors go back, if they win another championship and it's 3 and 4 years, and whoever's coming out of the East is just going to get smoked, we can assume that, then, yeah, I think some people will feel like this is a little bit dull. And the Warriors are young enough in that core that they're going to be together for a while. And it's impossible for anybody to match that. And that's the biggest problem, Jim. It's not just that they're great. Yeah, other teams have had runs. Yeah, the Lakers won 3 in a row and the Bulls won 6 out of 8. Nobody looked at those teams and said, there's no way we can try to compete with them based on number of stars. The Bulls had 2. The Lakers with Shaq and Kobe had 2. This is an era where the Warriors have 4 of the best 15 players in the game, depending on where you want to draw the line on the top 15, top 20, whatever. You can't just stack up 4 of your own. It's not that easy. And it almost requires that to contend with them. So, again, it's not about how many finals they go to. It's not about how many championships. If there's a problem, I would say it's because trying to match what they have in a 30-team league with a salary cap and a luxury tax and a limited number of elite players to go around, that's where the problem comes in, because you just can't replicate what they have.
No, you can't, and we'll see where LeBron ends up and whether or not he can help rebuild a basketball Voltron someplace else. Before you go, Howard, I don't want to say that you have a crystal ball, but you did write a piece a while back on Jordan Bell that was titled The Perfect Warrior, and he did give Steve Kerr some good minutes last night. Why is Bell able to fit into that team and get Kerr's trust so that he's playing important minutes in Game 3 of the Western Conference Finals? What makes this guy different?
Yeah, I was happy to see him get some run last night. I thought he was going to get more back when I wrote that story a couple months back. Look, Kevin Looney got into some foul trouble, so it opened the door there. But they have always felt internally that Jordan Bell was the guy that, looking ahead, was going to be the perfect center for them to go with that Hamptons group, with four of the five Hamptons group, that when they're going to start a quote-unquote traditional center, which Jordan Bell really isn't either, but he's got the athleticism and the agility and the ability to guard across five positions, to switch across five positions, that and the strength as well to be able to bang with opposing centers, that he fits really well with their four all-stars. And so when you're not going Hamptons five with Iguodala out there, when you're going semi-traditional with a big at the five, Jordan Bell has that right makeup. And he just, personality-wise, the bravado he has in his game, there's just so much about him that, as I wrote about in that story, that makes him fit perfectly with this group. So even if he doesn't end up being influential as I thought he might in this postseason when I wrote the story, I think that that's the guy to pay attention to going forward, because I think eventually when they let Zaza go, when they move on from JaVale and all that, Jordan Bell is going to be the guy that they really believe can be the fixture at center with that group.
Eric, what's going on? How are you?
Clock screwing up again.
What's up, dude?
In the name of God, what have I done?
I was going to ask you the exact same thing. All right, so I got to ask, Eric, first of all, well done. Great job. An amazing email. Now, what was that? I mean, was that the first time you ever saw James Kelly, or had you been sitting on that thought and that blast for a little while?
I've kind of been sitting on it, and then you flashed that photo of the Intrepid, but the vision I had, I was just watching the show, and I closed my eyes, and I had this vision of the Reagan, which is a super carrier, and I just had this thing steaming offshore with the running lights on and just the bow digging in a storm and saying, that's it. That's what it looks like. It looks like the front shot of the aircraft carrier Reagan. I mean, the thing is just, it's enormous. I mean, you paint some stripes on there and you could easily land any aircraft on it.
All right. So you're telling me then that the Intrepid is actually not big enough, that the Intrepid's too small.
Yeah, the Intrepid's an old carriage, and that's old from the 70s area. I'm talking more like the Reagan, which is like the square footage on that is just almost two-thirds bigger.
All right, so I didn't give the guy enough credit, so I'll try and do better next time. So what did you think of first? Did you think of the Reagan first, or did you think Peyton Manning when you saw him first?
Well, Peyton Manning, and then you were right. There was really no pink there, so I said, I'll just throw it in there anyway and see what happens.
Right, so, Eric, what's the reaction been like? I mean, have you gone? Did you go immediately online? How has your life changed since you turned this show upside down all by yourself?
Oh, all my friends, they think it's hilarious, and I think it's hilarious, but I just can't. I'm gonna try to think of what I've done to make the show better and just keep doing it. I mean, it's just this thought just came into my head, and I had to post it out there, but I never dreamed that I'd crack you guys up, and I'm really proud of it.
You should be proud of it. And when I say ask what you can do to make the show better, generally people do not. Eric, you made the show much better. You made that day much better. That was an iconic jungle moment. So the question is, where do you go from here? How do you approach it from here?
Well, there's more to come. There's more to come. I can't just, it's just going to come to me, and I'll call in and hopefully make it better the next time.
You got anybody else on your radar right now? Or is it kind of organic? You have to wait and see.
Yeah, I was looking at the two guys in the back row, but I haven't come up with anything on them yet. So we'll let that work.
All right. Like I said, we went back-to-back interviews, so it's only right that I give you back your show. I've done it with email. I've done it with Twitter. Let's try the phone calls before I go back to one of my takes or rants. Let's go to Vancouver. Matt in Van. Line number one. What's going on, Matt? How are you?
What's going on, bro? Peyton Squatter's legacy is growing nicely here. Did I seriously hear one of these fat, puffy human cattle email in cracking us for being skinny? Rome, what's next? This guy going to email in and crack on us for having a nice full head of hair or a nice smile? For being able to pick up the finest women. Come on, man. And Rome, I want to personally thank the Vegas Golden Knights for shutting up that insufferable hellhole city of Winnipeg. Appreciate that, Golden Knights. By the way, half that roster is Canadians, and they will be winning the Stanley Cup this year. Also, quickly, Rome, we're tired of American crap getting sent up here to get polished up like Johnny Manziel. Keep your drug-addled trash down south. We don't need that crap up here in our crappy-ass league. Thanks for the vine, pimp. Touch base later.
Gotta rock him. Matt and Van, gotta rock him. And unless you want to hear that guy again at the end of the program, you better step up and do better. Or you're going to hear that guy again at the end of the program. Let's go to Barstow. Mark, great to have you on the show. Mark, how are you?
Hey, Rome, what's up?
What's up?
Hey, I know I'm stepping out of my lane a little bit, but I'm going to try and hunt some smack. Rex and Albuquerque, your takes are like smoking crack. That first gets you so high, then the rest are just crap. And you sound like that guy that was trying to sell those terrible eye drops. And speaking of wooden and laconic, whatever happened to Jay Stu? It seemed with his appearance on that game show and Murder, She Wrote, his star was on the rise. But then he left the show, and his career was murdered. Speaking of famous people, to that, what's his name in Denver, did you sell the rights to your gloss to Zipa? Because their new commercials remind me of your lame takes that make us all snore. And to that pediatric doctor, the only thing about you that's pediatric is your takes. I mean, they sound like you ran them by a group of third graders before you called.
That's not a good call. No. You don't like that call.
I don't like that call.
Mark, I don't know what your actual lane is. I just know you're not in it. You're right. You're way out of your lane.
Good night now.